The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we come back from the weekend and move into a Monday, Gary, how are you?
Doing good. I'm just finishing responding to emails, okay?
All right.
Here's one from Frank. There are no U.S. subsidies for oil. At times, I actually agree with some of your rants, but this is just one statement that's blatantly false. Hard to trust anything you both state because of that. And as I wrote back to him, subsidies are direct cash given to a company. Liberals define subsidies as tax breaks. We do not. Subsidies are direct cash just for existing. You don't have to make a profit or do anything. For example, we have talked about how Sarah Palin, when she was governor of Alaska, said, okay, you guys get tax breaks and incentives once you start producing.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we talk about is direct federal subsidies. And as we stated on Friday, subsidies are direct cash given to a company except for the subsidies from the mandatory government regulation of blending ethanol with gas. As we have mentioned, and we mentioned last week, you specifically brought that up, the oil companies do not receive direct federal government cash.
And we are against those mandates.
Yes.
On the blends.
Yes, we're against the mandates, so we're against those subsidies. Also, and I wrote to him, the left uses and substitutes the word tax breaks for subsidies. They are not the same. Another one here. So you compliment Trump on what he's done with the oil industry and exploration and things of that nature. But as a result, other countries have cut production and the price of oil has skyrocketed, causing all the American people to pay more money. Seems a little hypocritical to me. Maybe you can explain hypocritical. And this was mixed in with this gentleman. Do I have his name? No, just initials. Talking about the fact that as if you've been listening to what's his name, the economist guy from CNBC, who's now part of the administration. Larry Kudlow.
Oh, yeah.
Larry Kudlow came out over the weekend and said, oh, yeah, the Canada things, it's among friends and, you know, family, little disagreement here. And these are justified because, and as I wrote back to him, I said, no hypocrisy, as we've explained many times, looking and producing for our long-term future is good. If we can become energy self-sufficient, our long-term costs will decrease. Also, if we have stated OPEC and Russia's throttling back can only be temporary, and we brought this up last week because they indicated they may be opening up the spigots again as they are afraid to lose market share to the U.S. and other oil-producing companies. Kudlow, look, Kudlow was an independent and always been a free market. Larry Kudlow on CNBC, as an independent and not a paid member of the Trump administration, would be on our side completely. That's why, you know, and I'm a little disappointed in him. Because this is what he was talking about over the weekend is completely against what he has ever promoted.
Right.
When he has been on CNBC for the rest of his life. That's on him, not on us. But as I explained to the gentleman, economics does not care about opinions.
No.
Because Larry Kudlow joined the administration and agrees now with the tariffs, hypothetically, against Canada, does not change the economics of tariffs.
No, that doesn't change the equation.
No.
So how did the math change between his job at CNBC and his job at the White House?
Right. As we have stated before, whether Larry Kudlow changes his mind or not does not change the fact that government raising taxes does not expand an economy.
No.
And then I got this from Rob, also in Graham, Washington, and wanted to do that. I was listening to your show early this morning on the great station, Seattle, KVI. Hi, Kirby Wilbur. Haven't seen him in a long, 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 long time. Remember having a great discussion with him in the mid-90s. Can't remember about what, but it was at a talk show convention in Washington, D.C. a long time ago. Early this morning on Seattle's KVI and your comments on Donald J. Trump's trade tariffs, I disagree. It's reciprocity. When you cut taxes on corporations, you have to make up that money somewhere, and tariffs are apparently his answer. He didn't get the budget he wanted. So it really wasn't a tax cut then? So you're saying it wasn't a tax cut?
Well, and the difference, too, is that this would be a direct hit on the consumer.
On the consumer.
Corporate taxes are also paid by the consumer.
Right. They're all
When you look at the different mode in which they are collected or the nature of each of those taxes, it is to encourage or discourage a certain behavior.
Right. And remember the concept from the administration. Well, let me finish here. He goes, Donald J. Trump is just balancing out the Fed's tax yield. On a more important note, a manufacturing-based economy provides more stability in the markets, fewer bubbles, less uncertainty, where service-based economies tend to be more volatile. But that really has nothing to do with what we're talking about, except for the fact that we are for a manufacturing-based economy. And when you increase the price of steel and aluminum, which causes a ripple across it, it's not good. If you lower taxes and you claim it's good, if you raise taxes, it's bad. Why? Because it's how people respond to incentive. It's not about an opinion. And so as I wrote to him, I said, so it really wasn't a tax cut then? Because remember, what they said was we're cutting taxes because when you cut taxes, it expands an economy. Well, then if you raise taxes, because remember, in the end game, the consumer pays for all of it.
Mm-hmm.
The consumer pays corporate taxes. The consumer pays tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
So the consumer still is paying. This isn't an opinion. And it's funny because everybody thinks it's an opinion. If somebody says something, then it magically happens. One thing that I can't change, one thing that you can't change, one thing that no one can change is how people respond to incentive and disincentive. But so I wrote to him, I said, so it really wasn't a tax cut then? The administration over and over has said that if you cut taxes, you expand economic growth. Well, if you really don't cut taxes but are playing a shell game of lowering in one area and increasing in another, then their own promoted theory of economic growth vanishes. And then I let him know, by the way, corporations don't pay taxes, consumers do. So some interesting emails.
Mm-hmm.
That we received over the weekend. And, I do want to get to, because this I thought was really interesting, and we got so much to talk about here on today's show, including the hypothetical of a pardon, which just got blown up into ridiculous areas. North Korea shakes up its military leadership. Antifa, anti-FOS back. The new California future water limits. Bernie goes after Disney. Could Facebook be under more scrutiny after a New York Times article? My favorite story of the day, Netflix approval among Republicans falls, polling says. That's a Sherlock comment.
Yeah, right.
That's a Sherlock statement.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to get here because since we just mentioned here some of the emails on tariffs and things like that, the president over the weekend, one of the things that you and I have talked about is with President Obama. We always would have loved to just sit down with them where you could just sit down and say, could you please answer me what you think about politics? We always called him a cocktail socialist, that he was somebody who was hanging around all the professors. We didn't know really whether he understood it, whether he embraced it all, or whether he just liked the rhetoric of it and so threw it out. We did get a little clue of his economics when he talked to the San Francisco Chronicle back in January, February of 2008, it would have been. And said his goal is to skyrocket electricity prices. And therefore, you would skyrocket them so high where, renewable energy would be affordable. And then that would boost an economy. And we went, well, that's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got a little insight of how he thought. But that was one of our frustrations. You really never get to find out what many politicians actually think about economics. You know much more about what Eric and I think. Well, the president put out a tweet over the weekend, and he went after the Wall Street Journal. Why is it that the Wall Street Journal, though well-meaning, never mentions the unfairness of tariffs routinely charged against the U.S. by the other countries? By the way, they do,
mm-hmm.
and have mentioned it many times. That's a false statement by the president, or it's the president not knowing, or whoever tweeted it for the president, not knowing that the Wall Street Journal has talked about tariffs both in the United States and when other countries apply tariffs, how it actually hurts their own country. So to make that statement is just disingenuous. But he writes, why is it that the Wall Street Journal, though well-meaning, never mentions the unfairness of tariffs routinely charged against the U.S. by other countries, or the many billions of dollars that the tariffs we are now charging are and will be pouring into U.S. coffers.
Mm-hmm.
That just blew me away. The president just stated tariffs are a tax. It's going to be billions of dollars on taxes on the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw Laura Ingraham liked it. And I'm thinking to myself, where the hell did all the conservatives go to? Where did they disappear to? Where did they go? How did everybody all of a sudden change their mind? All of a sudden, taxes on the consumer, billions of dollars in taxes the president's promoting is a good thing.
Because those companies and those countries don't pay those taxes. The consumer does.
Right.
You pay the tariff. The American pays the tariff.
And so, again, whether it was somebody, whether he tweeted that or somebody did for him and everybody approved, that sounds good, that sounds good. I just shook my head. And one thing that you probably noticed over the weekend, if you're somebody who, now I can't say, I know that, for example, I'm sure Brett Baer covered it. I know our great friend Mark Levin was all over the tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
Mark was just pounding on the administration on it last, I believe it was Thursday on the tariffs. But you look at it, very little coverage in the conservative media promoting what a great thing Trump's tariffs were. They just didn't cover the story. Anybody notice that?
Well, there's there's the other side of that is that, you know, going back to the Kudlow thing. All right, so Kudlow now is basically just mimicking the president. Are you an advisor or a puppet? That's my question. How did the math change? How did the equation change? Because he was on with Laura Ingraham, and he said on Fox News, and he said, something to the effect of short-term tariffs can work. Whoa. Who said anything about short term? The president hasn't said short term. If the president's tweeting that billions and billions and billions of dollars, all these great things are going to happen as a result of tariffs, why would you ever, ever remove the tariff? If you believe they work, there's no reason to. None. If you believe it's a good thing, you would not only impose tariffs on steel and aluminum, but on everything. And I know they're already talking about the German cars and everything else, then you would put it across the board and not 25%. I mean, if raising it, you know, the cost of foreign goods is a good thing for America, then the tariffs should be 50%.
Tariffs should be 50%, 100%.
Right.
Because when you look at how economics works, it's an incentive. Mm-hmm. You look at what creates, and that's why, for example, on tax cuts, you give a tax cut. Why? Because it's incentive to do what? It's more of an incentive to invest.
And go out and put money into something.
Right. To invest, to grow, to do research, to expand it so you can make more money. Because that's mm-hmm. what people do when they have more money.
Mm-hmm.
They want to invest it in another area where they can make more money. That's logical. You can follow that investment. How does raising the cost of goods and services for the American consumer drive the economy to do better? It's impossible.
It can't.
Never had. And that's a by the way, that's a frustrating thing. I saw Eric Bolling, yesterday, formerly of Fox News, see everything's, because of the great economic news on Friday,
mm-hmm.
and saying that, how could anybody basically, I'm paraphrasing here, doubt the president when it comes to the tariffs? Because economics is economics. Doesn't matter who the person is. And when the president did great things with lowering tax rates, lowering regulations, mm-hmm. all good things.
Right. Yeah.
All good things, all positive things. Opened up to expand the drilling of our natural resources. All good things. All good things. We disagree with this because it's bad economics. Not because we dislike the president in any way. We had one caller try to make that case. Well, the people that didn't vote for Trump got nothing to do with voting for Trump. And it gets us back to what we talked about on Friday, and it's this tribalism and this political idolatry that exists. We've been through thousands of politicians in our careers. Mm-hmm. We know that every politician will be replaced. We don't care about the individual. We don't practice political idolatry. We don't worship any politician. They are men and women just like you and I. They are our civil servants. And we will compliment them when we believe they are doing the right thing. We will not compliment them and criticize them when they are doing the wrong thing. If other people and other talk show hosts and other media wish to practice political idolatry, that's their choice. God bless them for that. It's not what we do here. We have never done it here. Long term have never done it here. In our careers, it's not what we're about. It's not what we do. People in the media do different things. I believe right now what we do is quite refreshing, which is we don't care about the person. We care about the idea. And economic ideas do not change because there is a different person promoting an economic idea. They don't change at all.
No. We had the same position. We were both doing different shows. We had the same position on the steel tariffs with Bush.
With Bush. That didn't work.
Didn't work.
Not because Eric and Gary had an opinion that they didn't work. It's because the marketplace, when you raise prices, reacts in a certain way. And when you raise the price of goods and services, the consumer reacts in a certain way. Example. Gas prices going up. What's the projection of travel now? The projection of travel in the last month over the summer has gone down. Why? Prices have gone up. What is it? The incentive is not there. The disincentive comes in. Prices go up. People say, that changes my plan. End of story. I can't change that. Eric can't change that. You can't change that. President Trump can't change it. President Obama couldn't change it. President Bush couldn't change it.
President Biden won't be able to change it.
Clinton could, though.
He could tell you he changed it and convince you that he did.
Right. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio, so we have a fun show ahead as always.
We do. You know, it's a Monday show.
Oh man, and coming up, you and I. What a wasted Sunday it was. Seriously, to me, it was a wasted weekend because it was a great weekend to talk about economics and and have the debate on economics. Instead, we're debating the hypothetical of whether the president can pardon himself, which is a hypothetical. You and I've had that discussion, by the way, on the air because the Constitution doesn't address it. And as we've said, it really doesn't matter because if the president, by the way, attempted to pardon himself for a crime that nobody can identify that he has committed.
He looks guilty.
Well, then he would be impeached.
For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
After some scorching temperatures in the south last week, we'll continue to see the heat not as extreme, but we do have a drought condition now set up with the U.S. Drought Monitor showing the Four Corners region, western Texas, western Oklahoma, and portions of southwestern Nebraska under extreme and exceptional drought. Very little rainfall is expected for the week ahead in those areas. California not expecting any rain for the week ahead. The greatest rainfall on the order of between 4 and 5 inches will be expected in western Maryland down through northern Virginia, up the I-95 corridor from D.C., Baltimore into Philadelphia, Virginia Beach, and the Delmarva Peninsula. Look for showers today in the south to be wrapping up. We also have some rain in the Midwest and Great Lakes that'll be pushing through today. Tomorrow, look for clearing conditions, with the south drying out until later in the week. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
scare people. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. What was that note from the New York Times, Eric?
The Times noted, hold on a second, let me make sure I read it properly. It actually was from USA Today on the whole Trump lawyer letters, which, by the way, weren't written by Giuliani and his team. I know he's there now, and now that the letters have been discovered, he has to answer the questions. And his final answer, if you actually saw the interview or read the transcript, is he has no plans to pardon himself.
The
Times noted that no president has ever pardoned himself. I'm glad the Times noted that, because I wouldn't have known it.
The only thing that got me is I just think the administration, this is my personal opinion, talks too much about it, because, well, would the president pardon himself? He hasn't committed a crime.
Pardon himself for what?
That's what I would have said.
Identify the crime.
What's the crime?
Right.
That's what I would have said. I would have left it there. I wouldn't have said, well, the president wouldn't part. Well, the president had, don't even go that far. Before the administration, and this is where it's just Giuliani, you just shake your head. You're just like, go away. It's like before you even go there, it's like identify the.
Pardon himself for what?
Yeah, that's what I would bet. Pardon himself for what?
By the way, the left was just last week. Oh, this wasn't about Trump. It's not about Trump. The investigation, the spy wasn't about Trump. They were looking at someone else. See, this whole thing's never been about Trump. They're back and forth all over the place.
It's just, and that's where I think the lawyers from the administration have to get better. The lawyers for Trump, because these aren't for the administration.
Right,
these are
right.
Trump's personal lawyers. Mm-hmm. Sorry, but Giuliani so far has stunk.
He's horrible at answering questions.
Right. The president hasn't committed any crime.
No.
And by the way, the letter, this is sort of like when you and I have talked about the War Powers Act.
Mm-hmm.
And if a Republican president, sends to Congress and says, look, we'll abide by the War Powers Act, but we don't feel any need constitutionally to. If it's a Democrat president, it's not news. If it's a Republican president, it's huge news. And by the way, just so people understand, when we talk about the War Powers Act, that's the law that Congress passed in the mid-70s dictating what the president's authority is in wartime and how he has to report to Congress. Every administration since then has told Congress take that and
categorize it.
And categorize it. Thank you very much.
Compartmentalize it. We'll tell
Thank
you which
you.
Compartment to put it in.
Yes, exactly. We'll tell you what's going to be, because the whole point is Congress cannot tell the executive branch what their war powers are.
Right.
So when you hear all that, and that's never talked about when you hear the War Powers Act. Well, the War Powers Act doesn't matter unless Congress can change the Constitution. The Constitution is pretty vague on what the powers of the president are when it comes to war powers. When it comes to pardoning, the same thing. It doesn't mention whether he can pardon himself. So it's a huge hypothetical. Nobody knows what the answer is. And so any administration is going to say, well, certainly the president could pardon himself, hypothetically. Why? Because they're part of the executive branch, so they're always going to take that side of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's a hypothetical. It means nothing. And the whole point is you should have never gotten to that point. The only point should have been, look, president has, that was a letter just to warn the special counsel what we believe are the executive branch rights are. Well, could the president pardon himself for what?
I would say I'm not going to entertain the question. It's a hypothetical. And at this point, it does no good. It is not constructive at all to address a hypothetical in this situation. The president hasn't been charged with anything. We've been told that he's not the focus of the investigation. I don't think the president would feel compelled, because there's no crime. There's no crime here, and so in order to pardon himself, he would have to believe there was a crime. The president knows in his heart he didn't commit a crime. There's no reason to pardon himself, because there's not going to be a charge. There's not going to be an indictment. End of story. He had the right to fire Comey. He had the none of this is going anywhere, except for possibly to the 2018 midterm. It's not going to go to 2020. It's not, because it can't. There's really nothing there. And right now, I think Mueller, of all people, knows this. And if you think that the whole 13 Russians being indicted is no big deal, wait until he has to drop those charges.
Do you think that the American public over this past weekend noticed that the two different things that you heard, which were, well, the president's never been a target of anything. The president's never been a target of anything. The president's never been a target of anything. Well, he might pardon himself, but he's not a target of anything.
Right.
Do you think the American public has picked up on that, that seems to be, especially this weekend it was huge, but the last week or so it's been huge because the Democrats have been saying, especially with the spy, well, he was never a target in the investigation.
Right.
We weren't going after the president. So can Democrats please make up their mind?
Because up until that point, it was all about Trump, and it was only Trump, and he was the mastermind. And then they found the spy from the former administration in his campaign. Oh, that wasn't about him. That was about somebody else. It's never been about him. And now it's about him again. No, it's not. Never has been. I mean, it's about him politically. It's not about a crime. They indicted 13 Russians. Mueller indicted those 13 Russians thinking they'll never show up in court. Yeah. Well, apparently Vlad had something else to say about that and hired an American law firm to show up and represent them. And then says, Discovery, hello, turn over everything you have against our clients. And now Mueller's going, we're not prepared. Really? Then why did you indict? If you're not prepared,
by the way, I love
then
this.
What evidence did you have?
Now, who was that on Mueller's staff who spoke like that?
Mueller.
Okay.
That was Mueller.
Okay.
Your Honor, we're not ready. Really? Because you indicted. I'm not here to defend 13 Russians. I could care less if they rot in prison. However, show that they did something and go after them. And if we want to indict Russians, great. Line them up and put them in jail.
No, I would not to speak for you, but I believe your point would be the reason the suspicion that you're indicting Russians in order to keep the political will behind or supportive of
your
investigation of Trump.
It's busy
show that you're doing something. Yes.
Yes.
But
he never ever expected them to respond to those indictments. And now here we are, and they're asking for a speedy trial, which they have a right to, and they're asking for discovery, which they have a right to. And Mueller's going, well, we weren't prepared. How did you get to an indictment if you didn't have all the evidence together? How does that happen? You know, you had to have known. In the event that they show up with lawyers in court, they have a right to a speedy trial and a right to discovery in that case. You knew that, right? Oh, you didn't actually expect them to show up.
And again, when you look at it, because we're talking about the reality of it, and the letter was about the legal part of it. When you believe that your campaign or you're under investigation, and so remember, that's Mueller was put in to do what? To find out if the campaign colluded and Trump colluded with the Russians. That's what the political narrative was for the longest time. So of course, as the executive branch, you lay down your position to the prosecutor.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, as we have stated to begin, you know, still now, what's the crime? And nobody can identify what the crime is.
No.
Still today,
right?
Almost 2 years later. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Bob in Indiana about tariffs. Bob, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. Hi. Hey, I can make this real I can make my points real short, and you can talk to me off the air if you want.
Okay.
I got three points about tariffs okay. and Trump. Number one, I believe there is absolutely a negotiation tactic, and he is intending them to be used to make us have a better trade deal with other countries.
All right, quickly. No. Wait, what's a better trade deal?
Where do you get the other countries to drop their tariffs?
Well, wait a minute. There's nothing that we don't. Are we in a trade war with Canada?
We have a NAFTA agreement with Canada.
Right.
So, yes, we are in a trade war with Canada, and we're getting screwed.
How are we getting screwed? Give me a specific of how we're getting screwed by Canada big time. By the way, whose growth over the last, since 1961, their GDP is roughly 0.8% of 1% in that time period. The United States is around 3%. We have over three times the rate of growth of Canada over since 1961, since, you know, both our modern democracies. Tell us where the United States is getting screwed by our biggest trade partner when our growth rate is much greater than theirs. And over the last couple of years especially, our trade is even up when it comes to shipping one thing over to the other. And the other point that I would have for you is, why are you getting screwed? This is a question no one has ever answered on this show. Why are you getting
answered?
All right. Why are you getting screwed if somebody wants to give me their durable good and I give them a piece?
I'll answer the question.
Well, I haven't asked it yet. I haven't asked the question and you're answering it already. That's fine. Why are you getting screwed if somebody gives you a durable good and you give them a piece of paper?
It's simple. The answer is the NAFTA agreement is not just with Canada. It's with Mexico.
That's not my point. That's not the question that I asked. I asked the question, the president believes that the only good trade is when somebody gives you a piece of paper, which is money, or which can be represented by an electronic currency. But the only good trade is when you give somebody currency, when they give you currency and you give them a durable good. Why is that? Why is it not good when we can get a car from somebody else and all we do is give them a piece of paper? Why is that bad?
I think you're oversimplifying your position.
Thank you. I figured you would answer that way. I thank you very much. You've got to be able to answer that question if you wish to talk trade. You cannot talk trade if you can't answer that question, because that's what it comes down to with the president. Trade is bad when we get the durable good and give them a piece of paper. But when they give us a piece of their currency and we give them a good, we win. Why is that?
Well, and the president is promoting all these billions of dollars that's going to go into the government coffers. So if that's a negotiation ploy, he doesn't plan on, as far as we know, changing that.
Yeah, the president said right here in his tweet, as we read earlier, why is it the Wall Street Journal, though well-meaning, never mentions the unfairness of tariffs routinely charged against U.S. by other countries or the many billions of dollars that the tariffs we are now charging are and will be pouring into the U.S. coffers. So by the president here, he plans to keep those tariffs there because the consumer, the U.S. citizen, will be paying billions of dollars more in taxes to the government.
That doesn't sound like a negotiation ploy.
Why is that a good negotiating ploy to tax, as he has said, this is the president, the billions of dollars of tariffs that we are now charging are and will be pouring into the U.S. coffers. You citizens pay that.
Yeah.
Europe doesn't pay that. Canada doesn't pay that. You pay the extra money that the president is saying will go into the coffers. Why is that a positive?
He's building a trade wall, and you're paying for it.
If you can't answer those questions, then you don't know about trade.
Why would it be good to lower the corporate tax rate? Think about what they got accomplished. I mean, 21%, that's no small deal.
And by the way, trade is simplified. When the last call, you're simplifying it. No, I'm not, because that's what the president believes. I'm simply telling you, this isn't my opinion. I'm responding to what the president has said. The president believes that when you get the durable good and give them a piece of paper, you suffer. Seems to me to be a pretty good deal. Seems to me both sides are a good deal. If you get what you want, if you buy what you want with your dollar, fine. But if you also sell what you want, why aren't both good? Why is one better than the other?
And why do we need the government to pick winners and losers?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. You know, I want to address that we just didn't have time for the last caller, but he had another question that he wanted to address and comment that he wanted to make to us, which was the fact that the founding fathers were for tariffs. So if we're not for tariffs, then we disagree with the founding fathers.
Mm-hmm.
That was again, this is what was written out, what he wanted to ask. And I think it's a fair question for somebody to ask on that. If the founding fathers thought tariffs were good enough, well, you have to go back and actually look at history of what happened. Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations, which if you've ever been a fan of the late Milton Friedman, Adam Smith is considered he wasn't the creator, because capitalism is just the natural way that people do business together. And when civilized society gets together, it's a legal system created to protect people's rights of basically, you know, bartering. And all we do with money is barter in a different way. You don't barter directly, but you barter with the actual currency. But Adam Smith came out with The Wealth of Nations back in 1776, the same year the country was formed. And if you look at it both, and by the way, in that book, he came out passionately as anti-tariff. That book was embraced by many in the Continental Congress, including James Madison, Thomas Jefferson. Madison wanted it to be Congressional Library. He rallied it, nominated it to be one of the first books to be in the Congressional Library. Monroe wrote to Jefferson about it a lot, and talked about the fact that the whole balance of trade thing was a mirage, what we talk about today. Now, the problem is, and one of the interesting things that historians note, is that the whole Boston Tea Party was based on the tariff-created monopoly of the whole tea business. And then the first Congress created the first tariff. Well, why was that? If they were anti-tariff, well, what they did was they created a temporary tariff in order to pay off the debt from the Revolutionary War. They actually weren't pro-tariff. But when you had states, the 13 states already taxing, and you just came out of a war that was fought over taxes coming from the mother country, the Continental Congress knew they had to pay off the debt from the Revolutionary War, but they needed to do it and get the most political expediency out of it, which means we can't let people know that they're actually suffering by direct taxing them. And they knew that the easiest way would be a temporary tariff tax, which was temporary. And of course, any tax which is temporary, whether it was started from the Continental Congress, didn't go away right away. Then the other tariff that came along was I believe it was right after the War of 1812, where the federal government needed to pay off more debt from the War of 1812. And again, political expediency was the fact that, okay, what will the public accept? Well, we'll do a hidden tax. So it shows you that you can even fight a war over monopolies and tariffs, and then as soon as you form into your own country, what's the best political expediency in order to keep the public from getting angry is you do what? You pretend that you're taxing somebody else, yet you're just putting a hidden tax on your own consumers.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the tax that came in after the War of 1812, a lot of the Southern farmers wanted it. Number one, first off, many in the Continental Congress wanted it, especially against Great Britain, because Great Britain had attacked during the War of 1812 many U.S. ships in English harbors, and they felt that they needed some, you know, they needed to punish Great Britain by somehow taxing our consumers in some way. And the other one was the fear of Southern farmers that they were going to put huge tariffs themselves on, they were going to subsidize their cotton in order to get the market here in the United States, and Southern farmers were concerned about that. So they put tariffs on English cotton. But it was something that was debated and vehemently disagreed with by many founding fathers, just to get history straight and understand why, that just because you put in a temporary tariff does not mean that you believe that it's the best way to go, but it's the political expediency way to go.
And the president hasn't said anything about temporary.
Well, no, like I said, in the president's own tweet, why is it that the Wall Street Journal, though well-meaning, never mentions the unfairness of tariffs routinely charged against the U.S. by other countries? As we already mentioned, the Wall Street Journal has done that many, many times.
Well, he just admitted that tariffs were unfair, by the way. So,
right, exactly.
Ahead.
Or the many billions of dollars that the tariffs we are now charging are and will be pouring into U.S. coffers,
mm-hmm.
which means are and will be. In that tweet, what he's saying is there's an expectation that the consumer, the United States citizen consumer, will pay a tremendous more in taxes, which will bring billions of dollars into the U.S. Treasury. I found that quite interesting that the president would promote a tax against U.S. consumers and would brag about the billions that a new tax on American consumers would bring into the Treasury.
Well, because if you believe that, if you're promoting it as a good thing,
that's the whole point. If you said, then, unfortunately, we have to tax our own consumers in order to fight this unfair trading,
right.
He didn't do that.
No, that's not what he was saying.
Not what he said.
It's going to be a good thing. He's promoting it as a positive. If it's a good thing, then why aren't you doing it across the board with all goods? With everything? With every trade partner? Across the board.
Right. And just to be fair, you had people like Alexander Hamilton, though, that was back then an anti-globalist and didn't want trade and wanted the United States to be much more isolated and their own. So the debate went on in the Continental Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Jefferson and Madison viewed Adam Smith and his economic, Madison and Jefferson viewed Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations, and especially the part on tariffs. They didn't believe the tariffs, or there was such a thing as the balance of trade, where every country needs to have equal trade with another country. It doesn't work out that way.
No.
It doesn't work that way. International trade doesn't work that way. I saw a couple of economists say maybe the president just thinks because everything in the business that he was win and lose. When you're in casinos, it's win or you lose. There's a winner and there's a loser.
Mm-hmm.
So every time a transaction is made, there's a winner and a loser. Trade isn't that way.
Well, no, it's not. It isn't. It's not that way in real estate either. You know, I mean,
no,
because
if
you look at, and this is why we know that he knows this, but keep in mind, the president has believed in tariffs for a long, long time, for decades. It's the one thing he's been consistent on, I would say probably politically speaking, for the longest. I think even longer than he's been talking about other nations going to war with other nations and having them pay their full freight, which, by the way, we agree with. And I'm talking about our allies that go to war with us and support us in those efforts and having them pay what they say they're going to pay, great. But that, even on that issue, I don't think he's been as long-standing as he was and promoting it. I probably since before anyone ever asked him if he was going to, if he would ever consider running for president. He's been out on the talk shows for decades talking about tariffs.
Yeah, I remember the early 80s where he was on Phil Donahue and talking mm-hmm. about tariffs.
Yes.
So this has been one of the longest held beliefs of the president,
yep.
which when he ran for president and in his initial campaign in 2011, his pre-campaign, because
right.
he never really had a campaign. And we stated it back then, and boy, we got flack. We said, look, this is a president who was written a possible presidential candidate that has written in his book all the liberal philosophies that he's had, which the longest standing one was protectionism
mm-hmm.
and tariffs. So, I mean, this was really, really nothing. This is nothing new. It was, to me, the greatest, always been the greatest fear from a president that I voted for and I think has done wonderful things. Look at the numbers that came out last week. Very positive. The Atlanta Fed now upping their second quarter to 4.8%. The president has done things that we agree with tremendously, which are reducing taxes, reducing regulation, doing whatever he can to open up to make sure that we can produce our own oil and natural gas, unlike the last administration. Our fear has always been, and our question has always been, since he seems to understand that side so much, why does he seem not to understand trade and tariffs at all? Or does he? But why doesn't, because clearly in his tweet, he knows that the American consumer is going to be taxed billions.
Mm-hmm.
He's promoting the tax on Americans in the billions as a positive.
Mm-hmm.
Which blew my mind. That was the one thing that blew my mind over the weekend. I said, did he write that or did somebody else write that for him? Because that's not really a positive. And then I saw Laura Ingraham and other conservatives like that tweet. I'm like, where have all the free market capitalist conservatives gone?
Mm-hmm.
Do they all disappear?
And well,
but the one thing I did notice over the weekend, and I mentioned to start off the show, is mm-hmm. conservative media completely quiet. If you look at their for example, I was looking at Fox News. I mentioned this on Thursday. You could hardly find it anywhere. You couldn't find it on their front page. It wasn't one of their top 20 or 30 stories. You would think that if it was a positive for Fox, they would, Trump puts tariffs on Canada and Europe. Great times are coming. Didn't appear anywhere on their website.
No.
Now I know they probably talked about it. I didn't get to watch TV. I was looking at their website specifically,
mm-hmm.
and I know our friend Mark Levin railed against the tariffs on his Thursday radio show.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that over the weekend on a conservative website. But it's almost as if all the conservative websites are afraid to cover this in any way, which I find interesting. I think fascinating to go in to these editors and say, why didn't you cover this story at all? Why is it like a non-story to you? Are you afraid to cover it in any way? Are you afraid to cover it in a positive way because you'll think you'll alienate conservatives? Are you afraid to be negative against it because you believe that many loyal Trump supporters then will be upset about you? But just not to report it at all, I found really interesting as a major story. And I don't have the answer.
No, I don't.
I don't have the answer for that.
No,
but to
no.
me, to talk economics and to talk things like this, to me, is the gold of political and economic talk, I mm-hmm. think.
Well, it's here's the question. If it is a positive, but it changes, if the president re-implements the exemptions for Canada, Mexico, and the EU.
Could happen next week at the G7.
It could happen before the G7.
Yeah, it could happen. Did it happen yet? Did you check the news?
Right. And that's the point. You either believe it or you don't. Because the president is using this as leverage in negotiations. His Twitter, let's face it. His Twitter could do the same thing without implementing. If we don't get the deal we want, we absolutely will impose tariffs on these nations. End of story. Does anybody believe the president's not going to follow through? So you could have the same threat without hurting business. Because what you're doing is you're using business and the American consumer as your leverage. You're inflicting pain on the American consumer. That's what you're doing. And American business. Why would you do that? If it were just negotiation, you could be very open about it and be very consistent about it. And he could also point out, people know this is the one thing that I've been on for a long, long time. And I know that a lot of people disagree with it. But if we don't get the deal that we want, then we will absolutely impose tariffs on our trade partners.
In the president's own words, because it is his personal Twitter account, even if an aide does it, or the many billions of dollars that the tariffs we are now charging are and will be pouring into U.S. coffers.
That sounds like something, again, that right there is promoting what he thinks is a positive. So if you believe it's a positive, why would you ever take those tariffs away?
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on inspections. If you're cited for a vehicle defect during a roadside inspection but are not put out of service, you're still expected to arrange necessary repairs. Any future roadside inspections will result in the same violation if it's not taken care of. If you arrange the repair during the same workday, you must keep the maintenance receipt as documentation that the repair was made. If the repair is not made right away, your next post-trip vehicle inspection report must show the defect. The technician, or you if you're authorized to make or oversee the repairs, must certify the problem was fixed. The first time the vehicle is operated after the repair requires the driver, which may be you, to acknowledge the problem was corrected. This tip brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us on jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90. Red Eye, very, very quickly, just going through some emails here also that we have gotten, and this is Rob sent this to us. I sent this email to the wrong radio address before. Now I got the right one. My position is that your broad view of the tariff situation is not sufficiently broad. I hope do not know that this is a bargaining tool being employed by our businessman president in his bid at a political solution. I do not know the details of the tariffs, but would like to know if it is actually focused on goods imported from China by other countries such as Canada and then being imported to us as means of getting around the tariffs. If that is indeed the case, and I see it as a tactic to further try to enforce discipline on China to correct their business practices, your economic explanations are spot on to my limited understanding. I'm depending on Trump's business skills here. That would also be my understanding of what Larry Kudlow is backing his explanations on. Thanks for the terrific insights and the explanation of politics every night. Thanks, Rob. No, there's no allegation that Canada is working around with Chinese goods.
Not specifically. No. If the administration were going to talk about that, then they should be very clear. And I think politically they could make the case. In fact, Kudlow would be the first one on it, saying, look, they're getting around the, right. You know, this whole thing of China dumping steel here or whatever it would be by bringing that into Canada and then bringing it into the U.S.
Now, there was suspicion that Mexico was doing it, but then they had said later on that they could check that wasn't happening. And that's why initially they put the exemption then on Mexico, that Mexico was included with Canada, you know, Europe and Mexico, because they said we can have a sufficient safeguard so that doesn't actually happen.
Right.
with Chinese steel there. So no, that is not the case. And again, what we find surprising is over the last couple of weeks, it seemed the president, especially at one point, was much more gracious and was concerned about the jobs in China, which blew our minds. Mm-hmm. And again, it's this type of manic messaging that comes from the administration that confuses most people.
Right. And it's up to the administration to make their political case for every major move. And this is a major move. This is a big deal, especially if these tariffs are going to be in place for a while.
You know, and we'll okay, we got a couple seconds here. Mm-hmm. I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, all right. I'll gather my thoughts and we'll have more coming up following the bottom of the hour. Okay. Hang on.
To have the conversation, Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. The other thing when we talk about the tariffs, I mean, what the president is using is national security issues, mm-hmm. saying our national security is imperiled because of our trade with Canada and Mexico and the European Union. That couldn't be any further from the truth. And as we have pointed out many times that nobody can debate, it's impossible to debate. That his whole point that, remember, I think we're closing in, I believe, on about making about 75% of our own steel. The other is supplied, by other other nations, including Canada, which I believe is our biggest supplier of foreign steel. But about 25% is supplied. And you've got, Canada, Mexico, and probably five or six other nations involved with it, all that are friendly to the United States. When you look at who we deal with on metals, the vast majority are extremely friendly with the United States. When you have a supply chain of five or six friendly allies for the vast majority of imports, for the major things that you need for construction and military hardware, that's a good thing. That's not a bad thing. You want that. That makes that's anything but a national security risk. That's a national security benefit. So the reason the president is giving is completely bogus, and everybody knows it. Somebody who says, well, that must be a negotiating position. Well, if it's going to be a negotiating position, people have to know that you're serious. Everybody knows that's bunk. Everyone knows when the president says it's a national security issue that he's not telling you the truth. So when you negotiate and everybody knows it's a bluff, and the reasoning is false, what do you accomplish?
Well, and again, it there's no indication by him that this is short term. Larry Kudlow said it on, I think it was Friday evening, on Laura Ingraham on Fox News, something to that effect, that he implied that it would be, short lived. Well, my question is, especially with the Larry Kudlow in place, why could you not, if this is about negotiations, why could he not publicly come out and say, look, people know that I believed in tariffs for a long time. And right now, we need to get to the table with these trade partners. We need a better deal, whatever better deal is. And if we don't get what we want, then we will definitely impose tariffs. You can have the same effect with those threats, because I don't think anybody believes the president wouldn't follow through on a threat like that. He's got too long of a history on this issue. So if you've got Kudlow in place, if you've got, Wilbur Ross, what are they going to be? Are they going to be your advisors? Are they going to be part of the administration? In the case of Commerce Secretary Ross, and it is different when you're a cabinet member. You are doing the will of the president, but My question here is for Larry Kudlow. Are you an advisor? Is this your move? Because this isn't the Larry Kudlow of the past. Now, he's talked about China. This isn't about China. This is not about China.
I'm telling you, I can't tell you how many people over the weekend, we're not talking about China.
Not talking
we're
about
not
China.
Talking about, we're talking about Canada, we're talking about the European Union, and we're talking about We're talking about Mexico. We're not talking about stealing.
Not about China.
We're not talking about stealing of technology.
No.
We're talking about Canada that is viewed by Congress as a national defense contractor of the United States. That's how much we trust Canada.
Mm-hmm. And so, if you're an advisor, then you know, and now it's okay. These terrorists are okay, according to Larry Kudlow, in recent days. How did the math change from your time at CNBC?
Yeah. Explain it to us. You explained, right. He explained to us in specific detail why tariffs were bad. Why doesn't he explain to us in specific detail why tariffs are good?
Which goes back to what we were saying last week, and that is the administration needs to make their case. Now, the president kind of did that with a tweet. Now, he's trying to make the case, but what he's doing is he's admitting that it's a tax on the consumer. Billions of dollars going into the coffers. Well, how does that happen? The consumer pays the tariff. That's the only way you can get billions of dollars is if the American consumer pays it.
The other thing that's brought out, and a few economists over the weekend were talking about this, is if you have serious economic problems and trade problems with China, if they aren't following the WTO rules, if they are stealing technology, what you want to do is build up your relationship with mm-hmm. your extremely friendly trade partners mm-hmm. that are Western-style industrial and intellectual economies. Mm-hmm. The last thing you want to do is alienate them if the main perpetrator of the bad trade policies and not following the rules and stealing technology is China. You want that solid base of allies across the world that you are locked in with.
But because that was what Kudlow actually talked about, taking the other trade partners that China would have and putting pressure on them, pressure on China to get in line in terms of intellectual property. That you would pressure them by working with your trade partners, your friendly trade partners, to do that. Again, we know people are, you know, calling and writing with what they think the president is doing. It's up to the president to make the case. It's up to the president to say, here's why it's a good thing. It's up to his surrogates, his staff, his administration to say this is why we do it.
You know, economist Douglas Irwin was talking about this over the weekend, he's out on tour, and the Wall Street Journal had an article about him, and he said talked about Wilbur Ross stating that that Ross seems to emphasize reciprocity. We've heard that word, he said, quite a bit, mm-hmm. and he likes to pick instances in which the U.S. tariffs are lower than those in Europe and Asia. For example, he said Mr. Ross juxtaposes a 10% European Union tariff on cars with the U.S. Our tariff of only 25%, but neglects to mention the 25% U.S. tariff on trucks. Mm. If he were really concerned about higher foreign tariffs, he'd propose a free trade agreement with such countries, bringing all tariffs down to zero.
Mm-hmm.
That's the fear we have, and the fear that we have from a president that has always been pro-tariff since he has been in the public eye. You and I have talked about this many times. There is no issue where he has had a record on than tariffs.
In terms of the time span, it's been from the beginning, really.
So if you're like, well, okay, but what about trucks? We have 25% on tariff on trucks, mm-hmm. which we should take that off too. When you see, for example, when you see the things that are being proposed in NAFTA, and we talked about this before, that the feeling in Mexico and Canada that the president really doesn't want any free trade agreements.
No.
He wants
no.
the U.S. to put tariffs on a ton of things. They believe that that's his philosophy. And the reasoning is, especially in Mexico, that the president wants the minimum manufacturing and wage in Mexico to be, I believe it was, last I saw, $16 an hour American.
Mm.
Well, that's not going to happen. The United States would not allow another country to dictate the wages of our country and the minimum wage that we pay. And by the way, that minimum wage for manufacturing in Mexico would be higher than in the United States.
Yeah.
So when you look at that, what the president, and that's the whole point, the people that have said, well, he's not a protectionist, we've always asked, is he? You know, it's not up to us to guess, because people get mad. Well, you guys aren't sure. That's our whole point. We're not sure where he stands, and he needs to make it clear to the American people. If he is a protectionist and he wishes to have where the United States is much more isolated and much more self-sufficient, he should say it.
Right. And tell people how that works. Break it down for the American people. Make your case.
Right. Make your case that we should be providing goods just for the 330 million people in the United States. And that's what we should be doing, is focusing only on the United States and U.S. manufacturers producing goods for U.S. consumers only. And that international trade is bad. If that's your philosophy, tell us that. But the fact is, we keep guessing. We get little tidbits here and there. That's not our fault. That's the president's fault.
He has to be very active and getting that message out. When if you're going to promote any issue, especially the big issues, you're going to have to be very active in getting that out. And, you know, call it a learning moment, teaching moment, whatever you want to call it. You're going to have to make the case to the American people.
When the president puts out the tweet, as he did over the weekend, that the Wall Street Journal isn't talking about. By the way, we here at Red Eye Radio will talk about the billions of dollars that will be going to the government from the consumer that the president believes is a great thing. Does anybody else agree with the president on that? That should be a positive that we're talking about, that the billions of dollars of taxes through tariffs put on U.S. consumers is something we should be bragging about. Anybody agree with that? The president wrote it. We didn't.
And by the way, it's not just the tariff itself and what you would pay for an imported good. It's also the increased cost of the domestic product.
Oh, yeah.
On any tariff.
Yes. Yeah, because everything goes up. But that isn't money that goes to the coffers.
It is. If they're making more money, that would be more tax money.
More tax money. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. That way. Yes. Yes. Both ways.
So the consumer pays either way.
Right.
So you're going to pay higher for those costs. Because remember with this in front of the steel workers, he was talking about, you know, protecting them. Then it's about punishing other nations. It's about, you know, well, you got to make the case all across the board. If it's about all of that, show the American people how that works. That's something that has to be clearly demonstrated if you're going to win this politically.
Let's go to Christian in Hawaii. Christian, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome. Hi.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening. Hi.
It's a pleasure to be on the show tonight. As a result of listening every night, I am usually the best informed person in the room. I know how it goes, so I'm going to get right to the point.
Okay.
When President Trump said he was going to issue the tariffs on the goods, Mexico and Canada and other countries went to the World Trade Organization, which will most likely issue a judgment against the United States against the tariffs. But there's a clause in that judgment that says that if President Trump claims that it's for national security, that judgment cannot be levied against the United States.
Yeah, but the World Trade Organization probably is not going to buy that explanation, as nobody in Congress, when Republicans in your own party don't buy the argument and believe that you're abusing your executive branch power by doing that. As we mentioned, Senator Toomey, who is as conservative as you can get in Congress, promoted the fact that it's a bogus claim by the president. Probably the World Trade Organization is not going to buy into it.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, we understand that. So you're assuming that they're going to buy the explanation, which, of course, nobody's buying because everybody knows it's not true. It's not about national security.
It doesn't make it true just because you say so.
Right. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Radio. He is Eric, and I'm Gary. Yeah, I mean, the president, to our last call, the president is using the national security option because that's the only way that he can put tariffs on is by using that executive order, that he's doing it because of national security. That's why, you know, Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania, the Republican conservative, came out and said, whoa, that's abuse of the executive branch power. This is not to steal tariffs against Canada are not a national security issue.
Right.
That's bogus. So the fact is, you know, he's already been challenged on that from his own from conservatives in his own party. So he is using that because he's allowed to put the tariffs on because he has used that designation. That doesn't mean that the World Trade Organization has to accept that.
Right. Yeah. It just because you say it doesn't mean it's necessarily true, and it likely would be questioned. And we'll see, in fact, if it gets to that point. You know, you mentioned the G7 earlier. It's quite possible that that either at G7 or before, the president re-implements the exemptions for those trade partners.
Well, as we have said, the two biggest points that are holding back NAFTA from passing are the 5-year sunset clause for Canada. Hmm. There's a good reason that Canada and manufacturers in the United States don't want that.
Right.
They don't want a 5-year deal. They want the security to know that their supply chains, their international supply chains, with our biggest trading partner, Canada, are good for more than 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
They want a long term. They want a program that's put into effect that is viewed until we decide to renegotiate at a further time, or 15 years or 20 years. But they don't want five. On the other hand, for Mexico, Mexico's already said, we're not going to accept the United States putting a minimum wage on our manufacturing workers of $16 an hour.
That they could never meet as a nation. There's the money
right,
just
they couldn't
isn't
do it.
There.
Right.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here. Two things we've been talking about, the whole tariff situation and the whole pardon, you know, ridiculous hypotheticals that were being talked about over the weekend with Robert Mueller, because they're all hypotheticals and just constitutional arguments. I did see it. Where did I see it? I forgot which publication had it saying. Well, maybe it was just on social media. Well, the reason that they were all talking about the hypotheticals on a pardon was because the economic news was so great on Friday, and so naturally they can't talk about that on the Sunday morning news shows.
No, that's a fair point.
I said the same thing. I said that's a fair point. But it was sort of ridiculous, all that talk that was going on, because it's all hypothetical. And, you know, and as Giuliani said, you know, it's an interesting constitutional argument. And, yeah, we believe the president could. Being a member of the executive branch, you would always take that side.
And, you know, when you look at that, too, if you're, you know, his personal attorney, that's one thing that you're going to kind of leave out there, that possibility. But Giuliani closed the door on it pretty much, saying it's not going to happen.
Right,
he talked in broader terms, generalities. You know that pretty much any president he believes has the power to pardon themselves. Well, you know that then you get into the political ramifications. Your personal attorney's going to tell you one thing, your party's going to tell you another, which kind of was going back and forth on Sunday. Members of the GOP going, yeah, let's not talk like that. Because, first of all, you have to go back to the beginning. Where's the crime? What would he be pardoning himself for? And then beyond that, politically, how would that look? He's committed no crime, yet he's going to pardon himself you know, to get on, this would be the, you know, the pro-pardon, I guess, argument, to get on with the business of the American people. Except, no, it wouldn't be getting on with the business of the American people, because the liberal media would never let that down. He clearly felt he was guilty of something.
Well, if look, if, you know, because you could generally put out a pardon for yourself for all future crimes, even if you're not charged with one, but odds are...
Exactly. Then you go on a crime spree.
Right. Then
when you get out of office.
odds are you're in all likelihood... you know, especially if you were, if everybody knew you committed a crime, if you tried to pardon yourself at that point, even your own party would most likely impeach you. But it's all hypotheticals because, as we've said, it's a stupid thing for the administration to be discussing because nobody can identify a crime.
Right.
Well, how many
no
times
crime.
Do I have to scream that because it just, drives you
well,
crazy.
And the liberals were all over it last week. Oh, this isn't about Trump. This is,
yes.
Really? Really? Pretty much for the last year, it's been only about Trump. And then all of a sudden, when you find there's a spy put in place by the former administration in his campaign. Oh, no, that was for other people. See, this isn't about Trump. Yeah, sure, it's not. And then, of course, as of Sunday morning, it was all about Trump again.
Well, I mean, what I got out of it is, look, the president needs to be held accountable if he pardons himself for a crime that nobody can identify that he committed.
Yeah.
So at that point, it became useless. Remember, you and I talked about this in 2016, that if Hillary Clinton became president, let's say, you know, that because the whole thing was still going on just... You know, remember, the investigation was reopened again, mm-hmm. and we said, well, what if she's, the hypothetical came up at that time, because we knew what the identified crime was.
Yes, we knew specifically
what the crime she was accused of, having a server in her own home mm-hmm. to do two things, to avoid the Freedom of Information Act, which is a crime, and then to let top secrets go, which, you know, into a private server, which, as we all know, violates the Espionage Act, so you could identify the actual crimes there. So we said, when he reopened it a couple weeks before, what if she's elected? Can she pardon herself? And that was the question that we looked at. It was actually based on Hillary. And a lot of people looked at it and said, well, president can do whatever they want, but in all likelihood, if she did it, she would be impeached. You know, immediately, if they found that she had committed the crimes, if she pardoned herself, it wouldn't matter. She would be impeached. And then that would go through the federal courts, and the federal courts would then, it would eventually get to the Supreme Court, which would be, can the president pardon themselves? There's never been a precedent on that because a president has never set the precedent mm-hmm. on whether a president can set the precedent.
And pardon that very precedent, president.
Yes, exactly.
President.
So you would have to go through it. So
yeah.
Really, it's worth talking as a hypothetical, but the intense passion, it was like, shut up, it's a hypothetical.
Well, and that's where I would have left it if I were in Giuliani's position. I don't pretend to be smart enough to be anyone's attorney. In fact, I don't even have the education for it. The political answer, I think, would be very clear. That you're asking me a hypothetical. It's never been tested. I'm not going to get into discussing hypotheticals. That's a cocktail discussion. And I'll leave it for the cocktail parties. I have no interest in discussing something like that because the president hasn't done anything. No one's identified a crime. He's not guilty of anything. He doesn't need to pardon himself for nothing. Next question, George. Real simple.
And I think that's really what the letter made clear to Mueller.
Mm-hmm.
You can't charge him basically with obstruction for...
Right. He did something that he was allowed to do.
Doing his constitutional duties. Mm-hmm. There's two things. You can't prosecute... Number one, we don't have an underlying crime. Therefore, you're saying that how can he be... Here's the point. How can the president... I'd say this became totally and completely clear over the last week. How can the president be charged with obstruction of justice, and how can Mueller be looking at the president for obstruction of justice for no identifiable crime from anybody close to him in his administration, including himself. Mm-hmm. If there's no identifiable crime, how can you be obstructing an investigation that isn't about any type of crime that you or your associates have committed?
Right. It's, again, this entire thing is about the media being able to keep this narrative going. I don't know why Giuliani insists on being on TV anyway. I just don't know why.
You and I had this discussion early on, a week into it. We said he's horrible.
Well, I just wouldn't, as the president's personal attorney, you should not talk about any potential case or anything else that's going on. The only time your lips should be moving is when you're directing your team to do something, you're advising the president, or you're in court. There's no need to be out, because it's not helping anything. You're not promoting anything. As an attorney, a personal attorney for the president, you're not supposed to be promoting anything. I know that there's political ramifications for all of it. You don't have to do any of that. Just do the work.
Let us go to Edmund in Birmingham, Alabama. Edmund, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Good morning.
Hi.
My question for you guys is, do you believe that they're keeping this whole Mueller investigation going purely to use it as like a propaganda to affect the midterms, because they have nothing to grow? They're grasping at straws.
Yeah. I can't tell you why Mueller is keeping the investigation going.
That's why the narrative continues.
That I don't know. The narrative continues because they believe it will help. But I believe the opposite. That's the other worry of Democrats right now, that nothing has been there. And if you see public opinion believing now that the Mueller investigation, more people every day are believing it's political, it may have the opposite effect.
And that's the problem, is that, Edmund, if, you know, and as Gary states, there's no way to know. We may not even know it after the investigation or situation is concluded. We may not learn that about Mueller, whether he believed it was political or whether he was acting politically or not. And if there was any bias against the president, I can tell you right now, I think that the reach on the 13 Russians that were indicted, I believe that was some kind of bogus move just to justify, I guess, his job, or maybe to justify to Capitol Hill his reason for being there. I don't think he expected any representation or those 13 that were indicted to show up. And I think it's very clear.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question. You wonder whether the judge will ever, when that gets back to court, will actually bring up and say, excuse me, why weren't you prepared to go forward with this? You know you're supposed to, because what did he ask for? Another indefinite?
Yes.
Indefinite extension?
Yes.
I'd like to see that back and forth between the judge and the Mueller attorney, you know, asking him specifically, well, weren't you ready to go with this, and what changed?
When you indict, when you send out those indictments, you're ready to go. Would you know that there's a possibility that, you know, even in the case of these 13 individuals and their companies, you have to know that they're what if they, because somebody had to ask that question, what if they do show up?
Because there's, as we brought to you a couple of, I think it was last week, there is a specific timeline that you have to be ready by federal law.
Right.
To actually take this to court. I believe it's, was it 90 days that we brought up? Was it last week? I believe it was 90.
Yeah, I forget what the length is.
And then said, well, because of discovery and everything. Well, that's your problem.
You
should have done that before you indicted them. And so that's where we've come up with the question. Well, wait a minute. You seem like you were completely unprepared for this. You're Robert Mueller. You were completely unprepared for the Russians to come back and the lawyers and say, okay, we're ready to go with this. And then you're asking for not just a 30-day delay, but an indefinite delay,
right,
to keep this in the news.
Right.
I just wonder if the judge will eventually come out and say, well, no, you got to drop the charges. Either you drop the indictment, or you proceed with the prosecution.
Which means you have to hand over the top secret classified information, sensitive information, to the Russians.
We do live in a bizarre world, don't we?
Yeah.
All right, we got Ray, Bill, Doug, and more of your calls and comments coming up. If you want to get in, we do have a line open, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls, 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly. I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Ray in Sacramento. Ray, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome.
Hey, guys. You guys, the last hour asked a question that no one's been able to ask. I've heard you ask it before. What is so horrible and what's so bad about trading a durable good for a piece of paper?
Yes.
Which is a dollar electronically?
Yes.
There's nothing bad with it because the dollar that we trade for a good goes, let's say we buy a car from Germany, that dollar goes to Germany. Germany uses that dollar to go buy something else, materials they need to build new cars, et cetera. And that increases the American dollar circulation around the world, which strengthens the dollar. But why Trump is for tariffs and kind of against that is I think he's getting a whole nother side of the economics different, and that's international trade. When an American company, pick one at random, like a FedEx or something that does business around the world, when they do business around the world and then they want to bring the dollars back to America and they're at a 45% tax rate, they keep it parked overseas.
And that's why
they kind of weaken.
And that's why they changed it in the tax law to bring that money back.
Yeah. That's what those companies were asking for. Yeah.
Right. Trump did that, which was good.
Yes.
Right.
But he's getting confused. He's thinking that since these dollars are going out to buy durable goods, that then Germany would buy more durable goods to help with their industry. And those dollars go further out to the other countries they do business with, he doesn't see that money coming back.
Right. But
it really does come back because one, it strengthens the dollar, gives the dollar more value. And then eventually it comes back because those companies use our dollars to buy our products.
They eventually have to, eventually buy a product or good from the United States with that dollar or the dollar would be useless. The dollar would be, it'd be just a piece of paper, and that's the thing that people don't understand. That's why the United States is a huge importer of what? United States dollars back. Investing into the United States is a huge surplus, and there's a reason for it, because the dollar eventually makes its way around, and that's what so many people don't understand. And again, we understand that whole concept. Our thing was, why is it bad that we were trying to get them to answer that question, and you answered it. It's not bad.
Right. Exactly.
It's because
we have to decide again, when you look at the entire picture in global trade, I know the people that say, well, no, you've got a globalist mentality. Remember, the globalist definition split into two different things.
It was the
EU version, which is, no, we should just open our borders and people should be able to come and go a lot easier at our borders. And we know the left is promoting that. In terms of global trade, that's very different, because what we're seeing now, what you're looking at is any given manufacturer or company in the United States being able to essentially build a base, a potential consumer base of billions of people instead of hundreds of million. That's the difference in the giant equation. And also, by the way, what was different than the first few years of our nation. I mean, because if you look at the way you talk about shipping, you talk about getting things here in a timely manner and being able to buy things, the American consumer makes the choice, ultimately. And so what we're saying is, if we're talking protectionism, that part of it, we're saying, well, the government should limit your choices by falsely raising the cost of those goods that come from abroad.
And also, globalism has gotten confused, the two different definitions, with just free trade versus a European Union where you have appointed elected representatives that aren't directly accountable to the voter of a particular country mm-hmm. that can make rules and regulations affecting that country.
And the biggest one of that is, yes. is right now is immigration, with a lot of the people
right.
in Great Britain
right.
And Italy and Germany saying, we don't want that to be in place anymore. We want those elected officials, those individuals from our government, they should have to answer to us. We have these other people, these other bureaucrats that we don't have access to. We have no power over as a people. And so that becomes very different. And when you look at the trade situation, the question is how far do they want to go with this? The president's going to have to make his case politically if this is going to continue.
As Ron Paul once said, any small business in Iowa should be able to do business with any company in Egypt.
For VDO Roadlog, here is your forecast.
After some scorching temperatures in the south last week, we'll continue to see the heat not as extreme, but we do have a drought condition now set up, with the U.S. Drought Monitor showing the Four Corners region, western Texas, western Oklahoma, and portions of southwestern Nebraska under extreme and exceptional drought. Very little rainfall is expected for the week ahead in those areas. California not expecting any rain for the week ahead. The greatest rainfall, on the order of between 4 and 5 inches, will be expected in western Maryland down through northern Virginia, up the I-95 corridor from D.C., Baltimore into Philadelphia, Virginia Beach, and the Delmarva Peninsula. Look for showers today in the south to be wrapping up. We also have some rain in the Midwest and Great Lakes that'll be pushing through today. Tomorrow, look for clearing conditions, with the south drying out until later in the week. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Their minds are always working. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. A couple of other stories and right back to your calls and comments. I see the New York Times story where Facebook could be a little bit more scrutiny. Apparently, they gave device makers deep access to data and users and friends without the users and friends' permission.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because they talked about these data sharing partners,
yes.
and I thought to myself, okay, because each of those partners potentially, and this is what, you know, this kind of gets into that realm of artificial intelligence and when robots become self-aware. But the point being is that when you start, like a company like Facebook that has so much data on so many people, you start sharing that. How could you not foresee something like this happening, where there is the development of those tools by those partners is going to become more and potentially more intrusive of your own customer base, the user base of Facebook? They had to have known that. And apparently Zuckerberg was not, you know, telling the whole story there when he was testifying recently on Capitol Hill.
According to the New York Times, Facebook had reached data sharing partnerships with at least 60 device makers, including Apple, Amazon, BlackBerry, Microsoft, and Samsung during the last decade, starting before Facebook apps were widely available on smartphone, company officials said. The deals, most of which remain in effect, allow Facebook to expand the reach and let device makers offer customers popular features on social networks such as messaging, like buttons, and address books. But the partnerships, whose scope was not previously reported, raised concern about the company's privacy protections and compliance with a 2011 consent decree with the U.S. Federal Trade Commission. Facebook allowed the device companies access to the data of users' friends without their explicit consent, even after declaring that it would no longer share such information with outsiders. we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, it's a big deal, because then if you look at, again, what Zuckerberg was saying on Capitol Hill and what they have said, what the company has said publicly, if he's said something on Capitol Hill in front of Congress and we're learning that that's different, there could be legal ramifications for Zuckerberg himself. But then the fallout from the users. Because when you look at, you know, a lot of people will, you know, get on Facebook and they understand clearly what's going on. They know. They're on somebody else's website, and they're only going to put on that website, they're only going to post or put up, you know, pictures or information that they want, that they believe will be, you know, seen by other people that, you know, outside the scope of their friendship, their friend base on Facebook. They understand that they don't control that. Of course, there's the other side, and that is, I hereby do not give Facebook my permission or any permission to share any of my information. You don't control that. That's Facebook's under their control. So the ultimate then decision for that user base will be, do I continue to use this? And how much information do I put on there?
The fascists are back. Antifa back in Portland.
Okay.
Violence broke out in downtown Portland on Sunday as Antifa, the fascist, stormed a Patriot prayer rally about a year after similar dueling rallies triggered bloody fights and arrests. Some protesters on Sunday hurled bottles and fireworks at police officers, while others were caught with knives and other weapons. Portland police tweeted, officials encouraged people to get out of the immediate area for their safety. Many of the Antifa activists wore black and covered their faces. Some protesters said they were demonstrating against police brutality. One side bluntly read, F the police. Mm. Patriot Prayer, which bills itself as a peaceful First Amendment advocacy group, organized a rally for 5 p.m., the Rose City Antifa scheduled a counter-protest for 4 p.m. to show Patriot Prayer, just as we showed them last year, that their violence and hatred has no place in Portland. Mm. So there you go.
All right. Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's so interesting, because how long before Antifa is targeted by the far left? You know, we've been watching these special interest groups.
Yeah, well,
these protesters
go from victims to the oppressors.
Right. I mean, it's coming. We just don't know how long it will be.
Well, I just, you know, it's been a long time since we've talked about Antifa, so, or as we called them from the very beginning, Antifa, before the media really got on. You know, we weren't sure how to pronounce it, so we called them Antifa.
Yes.
Because, you know, anti-fascist is what the fascists now call themselves.
That's what it stands for. That's what the group stands for.
Right. Yet they're pro-fascist in all of their beliefs, which is very interesting.
And that if you don't conform, they will resort to violence.
Right. Show your faces, by the way. Let's go to Bill in Arlington, Texas. Bill, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio about the tariffs. Bill, hi. Welcome.
How are you guys tonight? You all are exactly right. And I am very disappointed in my president. I did vote for him in November. I voted for Ted Cruz in the primaries. But he graduated from Wharton with a degree in economics. Yet he doesn't understand fundamental economics when it comes to international trade. It's very disappointing. I'm not sure what he learned there.
Well, look, the only reason we mentioned that we had voted for him was a guy, you know, was trying to imply that that's why we, you know, were disagreeing with the president on this, who said, no, we voted for the president. It's just, you know, Bill, I'm sure, Bill, you've dealt with this because we know you've called the show before, and I believe you're the same Bill that's involved in Republican politics, right?
Yes,
okay.
That's correct.
And so, you know, we've talked about this, and we've had agreements and disagreements, and I'm sure in the past, but the fact is, Republicans and conservatives aren't supposed to practice political idolatry. And, you know, these are people that are our civil servants. We don't worship them. We don't, we can honor them for their service, as, you know, we do with most people who decide to go into public life, because I do believe it is a sacrifice to do so, but we can still hold them accountable and disagree with them when we disagree with them.
Exactly. And I have been much more pleased with Donald Trump the last 6 months than I was earlier. And I think he's done a lot of great things, moving in a conservative direction. But when he does something bonehead, we have to point it out. That's what you guys are saying.
Yeah.
Now, I have a suggestion here based on, my economics education, because I got a degree in economics. And that is that we would be much better off as a country, particularly because we're the strongest economic power in the world, if we unilaterally abolished all of our trade barriers. If we did that, then our standard of living would rise, capital would flow to the United States, we would make money hand over fist, and the rest of the world would start dropping their trade barriers as well.
That's now, the one thing that, that's the one thing, by the way, Bill, that a lot of people had wrong on Ron Paul. They said, well, he's against NAFTA, so he's against free trade. Actually, he was against managed trade.
Exactly, and so am I.
Yeah.
But the point is, they come up with the national security argument, and I can understand that. But you know what? We're actually better off to just subsidize those industries that we think we have it, although I don't actually advocate that. But we're better off doing that because that costs us a lot less money. It's far more efficient to do it directly than to saddle all of the taxpayers of the United States with the cost of bad trade policy. So, and I also will point out that the biggest barrier to trade is the income tax in the United States. We need to eliminate it entirely. It is a tariff. It is a tariff because it goes into the cost of everything we make and sell.
I believe he can make the national security argument against China based on the stealing of technology. He really can't make it against Canada, the European Union, and Mexico.
No.
Yes, Canada is our best friend.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is nuts.
I know. It's the same thing. And, well, by the way, somebody call earlier and say, well, the WTO, will not punish the United States because of this. And we're like, well, no, because they're not going to buy the argument that it's about national security.
Yeah, I think the point of the caller, and thank you, Bill, it was that the administration is using it because they believe it'll pass muster there at the
WTO.
I don't know that it necessarily will, because it isn't the case just because you say it's the case. If you make the claim, then you're going to have to likely demonstrate that to the WTO.
Everybody knows it's a bogus argument.
Right.
Everybody. Well, nobody buys
the fact. His own party
is
out in full force saying, yeah, that's not the case.
Right. But it's the only way that he can do it.
Right.
He's not allowed to put tariffs on unless it's a national security issue. But then again, he's doing what he claimed President Obama did, what was wrong, which was what? Abusing executive power.
And he doesn't have to do that.
That it really isn't the case, but I'm going to use my executive power, even though I'm using it under false pretenses.
Yeah.
That's what you criticized Obama for. Now you're saying, well, in my case, though, it's okay to abuse executive power. Pat Toomey, the senator out of Pennsylvania, has accused him of that. So we'll see where it all goes. But you're right. It could be gone in a day or two. It could be gone by the G7 summit. You just, you don't know. But I can't see Canada. Canada said they'll never agree to a five-year sunset
on NAFTA.
And as you look at the manufacturing workers, this would be for any car, light truck, 45, any truck, what is it, that doesn't have
40%? That has
more than 40%. No, at least 40% of, what is it? Yeah, was it 40% of, what is it? If a car has more than 40% Mexican in it, then those 40% have to be paid at least $16 an hour.
Right.
They say the average salary is $8 an hour for manufacturing workers. Because this wouldn't be just on the assembly line. This would be people that make the parts.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you'd be setting a manufacturing wage for a lot of the, you know, of those industries that, by the way, can you even monitor that?
I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you enforce it.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Fred, Doug, Bill, and more of your calls and comments coming up following the top of the hour. Did you see the story with the North Korean summit coming up? This would be interesting to see where they finally end up. North Korea's top three military officials have been removed from their posts.
You know, that means something totally different in North Korea.
Yes.
Has anyone heard from them since being removed from their posts?
I thought the same thing. A senior U.S. official said on Sunday, a move analysts said could support efforts by the North's young leader to jumpstart economic development and engage with the world. Kim Jong-un is preparing for a high-stakes summit with President Trump in Singapore on June 12th, the first such meeting between the North Korean leader and a sitting U.S. president. The U.S. official who spoke on condition of anonymity was commenting on the report by South Korea's news agency that all three of the top military officials were believed to have been replaced. Kim's motivation remains unclear, but analysts said the shakeup allows him and the ruling party to tighten control over the Korean People's Army at a critical time of international engagement and domestic development. But again, it's tough to tell. I mean, I don't know what their influences are. Well, you know, were, you know, again, the suspicions that we all have of Kim Jong-un. Look, he only wants to go so far. He wants to remain as the absolute dictator of Korea and have a better economy.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily for his people, but for him.
For him. His people aren't going to see any of that.
And so might he be willing to give up some nukes or start the negotiation process? Yes. Does he want a free country or a much more open country? Absolutely not, because that increases the chance of a coup, him being removed, and then eventually being executed for crimes against humanity in his own country.
Yes.
So anything that he'd be willing to do is extremely limited.
If he's willing to kill his own family members to protect his power, then keep that in mind as you go forward with any kind of theory that this may be an all-new Kim Jong-un. It's just not the case. He's not going to change. He's wanting more stuff. There's no doubt he's suffering personally.
Right.
But he doesn't have any will to help his own
people. But remember, the number one goal of the president in the United States should be getting rid of the nukes.
Yes.
That has to be.
How you enforce that is beyond me.
That's in our self-interest.
Yes.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.